Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
I wish someone would scream it. I wish someone would shout it. I wish someone would look at the person next to them and go ahead and tell yourself you made it here. It's Friday. It's Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, both here just elated by the spirit after what has been a long-ass week.
No doubt. And, Mike, I can say this with all certainty. I never would have made it through this week of news that we got from the National Football League had it not been for you, had it not been for our team back in Bristol, led by our producer, Shannon Penn. I never would have made it without the team. Thank God it's Friday. We finally made it to the end of the week because it's been a heavy damn week.
It has. There has been a lot to digest and unpack this week. And thankfully, we have all been able to do it together. So we appreciate you coming to do it with us, everybody. We're going to try and keep it that way because the conversation doesn't get much easier today, especially with the Washington Commanders back in the news already for all the wrong reasons, and more questions about the hiring practices that we'll continue to delve into with the NFL. But Chris, we did get news late last night on at least one job front here. The Jacksonville Jaguars, we talked so much about Trent Baalke, their GM, Shad Khan, their owner, yesterday, and the task in front of them after we heard that Byron Leftwich was pulling his name out of that coaching search. Well, that coaching search ended last night. Doug Peterson, the former Super Bowl winning head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, will now become the new head coach of the Jags. And Chris, the thought for everyone that this immediately goes to is, what does this mean for the centerpiece of that franchise in Trevor Lawrence? Does this do anything for you as far as feeling better about his future based on this hire?
Yeah, I think it's a good move for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Now, the Byron Leftwich situation aside, I think the things that Doug Peterson brings to the table are going to directly benefit Trevor Lawrence and be able to give him a chance at realizing his full potential in the National Football League. You look at Doug Peterson's offenses in the 5 years he was the head coach in Philadelphia. They were top 10 in red zone percentage. They were top 10 in first downs per game. They were top 10 in interceptions per pass attempt, that ratio. And they were also top 10 when it comes to time of possession. And that's the big one. The time of possession, they finished second from 2016 through 2020. They were second in time of possession only to the Baltimore Ravens. And for an offense that has struggled to be able to sustain drives, that has struggled to maintain time of possession and been really one-sided affairs when it comes to most of their games, I think that's exactly what Trevor Lawrence needs, a coach that can bring that formula. You know, with Doug Peterson, it's going to be heavy on the RPOs. That's a skill set that Trevor Lawrence was prolific at when he was down there at Clemson. There's going to be the vertical passing game element as well. So a lot of the things that Doug Peterson does from an X's and O's standpoint are going to play to Trevor Lawrence's strength. But then overall, big picture, Doug Peterson understands how to operate an NFL program. In 3 of the 5 seasons he was the head coach in Philly, they made the playoffs and they won the Super Bowl in 2017. And he did it with 2 different quarterbacks. And not to mention, before Carson Wentz got hurt in that season, he was playing at an MVP level, 33 touchdowns to only 7 interceptions. So I think there's a lot to like with the Doug Peterson hire. I think you bring somebody in there that has instant credibility, notwithstanding all of the stuff, the drama that led to him being ousted in Philly. But in terms of being a solid football coach and knowing what the hell he's doing, they finally had that guy on the sidelines in Jacksonville. So they've gotten out of their own way in that regard. And I think that's going to help pave the way for Trevor Lawrence to be what we all thought he could be when he was picked number one a year ago.
Yeah, Chris, my reaction to this kind of reminded me what a painfully low bar has been set in Jacksonville right now. Because no lie, when I saw this news first break, I breathed a sigh of relief and I went, all right, at least there's an adult in the room now. Like, for all the rest of the things that we talk about that are still potentially issues, like you had a GM that was so offensive to certain candidates that they didn't want to take the job if he was still there, and an owner that people were showing up to games wearing clown masks because they protested the way business was being done there. All of that being said, I agree with everything that you just put out there. Doug Peterson has demonstrated the ability to go and be the adult in the room. He understands what he is doing. Because with Urban Meyer last year, that was someone waiting around doing this for the first time. Like, that was someone trying to figure it out at this level for the first time with the most valuable commodity in pro sports. So at the very least, Chris, now if you are Trevor Lawrence, you feel like you got a lifeline. Because not only that, I mean, listen, we know for Philadelphia fans also, Howie Roseman, Jeffrey Lurie. That hasn't necessarily been a front office combination between ownership and GM that Philly fans have lauded over the last few years or really enjoyed all the decisions that were made. So you can even say that Doug Peterson is well-versed in maybe dealing with people making decisions that he might not necessarily agree with.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I'm most concerned with, because Trent Baalke continues to be a central figure in that Jags organization, and I'm not quite sure why Shad Khan has been resistant to moving on from Baalke, given the failures that we've seen this organization have over the last several years, chief among them being the Urban Meyer hire that ended up being a disaster. So I don't understand what Shad Khan sees in Trent Baalke, because even when he was the general manager of the San Francisco 49ers, he had a way of ruining a good thing with Jim Harbaugh, who went to three consecutive conference championship games with that group with two different quarterbacks. It just doesn't make sense to run off good head coaches. And in this instance, a potential good head coach in Byron Leftwich, who was seemingly the first choice that the Jacksonville Jaguars brass had for their next head coach. So from that angle of it, Gojo, I really don't like it, because it still feels like it has the potential to be dysfunctional. And when you have a head coach and a general manager on different timelines, it opens itself up for those two individuals to play the CYA game if there happen to be any shortcomings, any failures based on the expectations that ownership may have. So those two being on different schedules doesn't necessarily create the right kind of culture, the right kind of environment that would foster being able to develop a franchise quarterback. And then also being able to get the pieces, the supporting cast, to surround Trevor Lawrence with to take full advantage of his ability. So that's the part where I'm still concerned about the Jacksonville Jaguars, but it yet remains to be seen what's going to happen on that front. There's rumors out there that Rick Spielman, the former general manager for the Minnesota Vikings, could potentially join the organization. We know it's not going to be in the general manager's capacity, but who's to say after time whether or not Rick Spielman is reporting to Trent Baalke or the other way around? So I think there's a lot of pieces that we got to monitor, we got to watch as that situation unfolds. But I think Jacksonville checked the box with hiring Doug Peterson. I was listening to Dan Orlovsky on SportsCenter earlier today, and he said young quarterbacks need three things. They need a good scheme, they need a good offensive line, they need a good supporting cast. And they checked one box, because you know that Doug Peterson is going to come to Jacksonville with a good scheme. Now, the offensive line leaves something to be desired. So do the skill positions down in Jacksonville. But to their credit, they're going to have a ton of cap space, and they got draft capital. They got the number one overall pick, so they can get a lot of the issues that they need to get fixed, cleaned up this offseason if they make the right decisions.
Yeah, that last part's going to be interesting here, because the roster for Jacksonville, there's some parts to like potentially in what they've got in their skill position core. Laviska Shenault has been a revelation in an NFL that's marveling over Deebo Samuel. You've got a guy who can give you a variety of different things there. Defensively, you've spent some pretty high draft capital on some pretty talented edge rushers in the last couple of classes. So if you can get someone in there to corral it all, you're right, Chris. There appears to be hope. The thing with this is, I feel like we're going to know in a year what direction this is going, because to your point, all the instability is still around there. This is an organization with one winning season since 2007. They have lost 10 or more games in 10 of the last 11 seasons.
Ugh.
So it's going to take a lot to change things overall here. But hell, we're watching the Cincinnati Bengals in the damn Super Bowl right now, so anything is possible through a great young quarterback who strengthens you. So we'll wait to see if that combination can be worthwhile for Doug Peterson and now Trevor Lawrence getting to link up in Jacksonville. Coming up next, though, in about 30 seconds, we'll take a look at what's left, because again, for the conversation surrounding minority head coaching hires in the NFL, the situation has now become dire. We will explain how it may all come down to one team and a familiar candidate who is used to disappointment in this realm. We'll get to that after this word from Vivid Seats. All right, guys. With the Safe Return to Live events, you can actually be there to catch all the action in person with Vivid Seats. That's right. Every alley-oop slam, every one-timer, every sideline grab can now be experienced live. And with Vivid Seats Rewards, you can earn rewards like free tickets. All you got to do, collect stamps, repeat, and redeem. Or collect stamps, redeem, and repeat. That would be the correct order. It's that easy. Easy to say, even easier to do. From upper level to courtside, Vivid Seats has you covered for all the events that matter to you. So grab your tickets today and cheer on your favorite team from the stands. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, life happens live. Canny and Golic Jr., here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Chris, this week, as we mentioned, has been pretty tumultuous on the front of minority candidates getting head coaching jobs in the NFL. And it has brought us back to the familiar refrain with a familiar coach at the center of all of this, because we've had so many of these head coaching openings now filled, these vacancies, with Jacksonville being the latest one. We sit out now and we look at, what is it, I believe the Saints, the Dolphins, and the Texans are the job openings left, right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
So we've got those three openings left, and now the Vikings in the mix as well there, although we've heard some of the reports about Kevin O'Connell being the likely choice there, the current offensive coordinator for the Los Angeles Rams. So if we're dealing in earnest here, three that we believe are still available. And Chris, it's happened again now. We have seen reports that Eric Bieniemy has been asked to be interviewed by the Saints for their head coaching position. Eric Bieniemy, who unfortunately has had to be the poster for this conversation over the last few years. And Chris, I'm just at the point where I am going to have to see Eric Bieniemy at the press conference being introduced as the head coach before I believe that this is anything other than lip service the way we've seen in this.
Yeah, he's been on the coaching interviews the last several hiring cycles, and it's starting to feel like the momentum is working against him in terms of him actually being able to break through and become a head coach at one of these other clubs. And I don't necessarily know that the New Orleans Saints job is a realistic possibility, because it feels like the in-house candidates are going to get the serious consideration. Dennis Allen, of course, their defensive coordinator, but also Aaron Glenn, who spent time on staff with Sean Payton down there for several seasons before switching gears and becoming a defensive coordinator for the Detroit Lions with his former teammate Dan Campbell. So they're bringing in Eric Bieniemy. We'll see what happens with that. Byron Leftwich is also believed to be a candidate for that job. But it doesn't necessarily feel like the tea leaves are leading us down a direction where we think Eric Bieniemy is actually going to land the job, which is a part of the problem when it comes to the hiring cycle and the Rooney Rule and all the stipulations that the NFL has tried to put in place in order to create a fair and equitable landscape for black coaches to get serious consideration. I'm not saying that Eric Bieniemy doesn't deserve the opportunity, because based on the job that he's done in 4 years of being the offensive coordinator for the Chiefs, he's clearly earned that. But it just doesn't feel like he's going to get that opportunity, Gojo. And I'm with you. I'm skeptical until it actually happens. Until we see him putting on a hat for the New Orleans Saints or the Texans or the Dolphins, I'm not going to believe that Eric Bieniemy is going to be a head coach in this cycle. It just doesn't feel like it's going to happen for him.
No, and speaking of the Saints, we'll talk to Saints defensive end Cam Jordan at 4:30 Eastern coming up on the show. And take the temperature. We talked to their left tackle, Teron Armstead, not too long ago, Chris, and there was a lot of momentum for Dennis Allen in-house for that team based on where they're at, because we know that's a difficult situation to walk into now without Drew Brees and with the salary cap situation there. So if you're Eric Bieniemy, Chris, I guess at this point, one of 32 jobs is still going to be valuable. The Saints have in a lot of ways been one of the franchises near the top, but it's going to take some major retooling for that thing to have a chance to be successful, considering the way that they have treated the salary cap in recent years.
No doubt about it, and it feels like New Orleans is going to have to do a controlled burn in order to get that franchise back on solid footing when it comes to their salary cap, but when it also comes to their draft pick allocation. So they've got some work to do, and this is not going to be a year in 2022 where they're going to do high-level winning. And I get what Teron Armstead said, what DeMario Davis said, with what I anticipate Cam Jordan saying in terms of them looking at this as a retool and not a rebuild. But based on where they're at with their program and their quarterback situation in particular, I have a hard time seeing the New Orleans Saints doing any high-level winning. Now, Tom Brady stepping away from the Tampa Bay Bucs does change things in the NFC South. It feels like it's up for grabs, but I would lean toward the program that has the proven commodity at quarterback, which is the Atlanta Falcons and Matt Ryan. But we'll see how things unfold with that. But yeah, this is not going to be an easy lift for whoever the head coach becomes, but especially if it's a black candidate that ends up getting the gig, this is going to be another one of those situations where it's a higher degree of difficulty that's going to require a little bit of a longer runway in order to get the program turned around. And we've seen, based on the NFL teams and how they've conducted business with black head coaches, that they don't necessarily get the leeway that they need to see the agenda or to see the plan through to the other side and to get to the point where the program could consistently be competitive.
Yeah, that's been the difficulty, and that's been what's at the heart of Brian Flores in the lawsuit against the NFL. Tyrann Mathieu, the safety for the Kansas City Chiefs, was asked about that at the Pro Bowl and talked about what he'd like to see here.
Being in this league 9 years, you hear a lot of things like that that kind of takes place, but I was more so proud of him, you know, really taking a stand, not just for himself, but, you know, for a lot of black coaches, you know, around the league that, you know, seem to get overlooked or seem to just be, you know, interview that just get checked off on. So it's a lot of black coaches that are capable of leading men, capable of, you know, winning, and really capable of leading, you know, these franchises and organizations. So I'm really hoping that, you know, things can change. And then a lot of these black men could, you know, start to get these jobs.
Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. Kanan Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. And Chris, as a lot of people have feared, it seems like that change is going to have to wait an offseason, because as we look at these last three jobs in earnest as the Dolphins, Saints, and Texans, again, if we assume the reporting about Kevin O'Connell and the Vikings is true, and that comes from Adam Schefter and others, so it's pretty reliable stuff. For the Dolphins, just fired Brian Flores. I'm not sure anyone of value or substance is going to take that job, and certainly that's going to be a hard place to sell a minority candidate based on the way that we've seen Brian Flores treated. The Texans just had a minority candidate in-house in David Culley, who managed to win more games than most anyone thought he could and was shown the door, Chris, I think because a lot of people thought maybe they'd go after Brian Flores. There was some thought maybe there was a connection with Deshaun Watson that might appeal to him. It seems hard to think that the NFL would have an active head coach with a lawsuit against the league, and so that circles in again on the Saints. This feels like it's a one-team competition, or really a one-team hope for something to happen for a minority candidate this offseason, and as we said, that even looks like it's a slim chance.
It really, really undermines the credibility of the defense that NFL personnel have had when it comes to the effectiveness of the Rooney Rule and how they're seeing progress, doesn't it? If the NFL goes 0-9 with hiring black coaches – this hiring cycle, I mean, it just goes to show you that the problem is even worse than a lot of us thought it was when you look at the disparity in which white coaches are hired versus the rate that black coaches are hired. So, yeah, I'm with you. Unfortunately, it feels like we're headed down that road, Gojo, and it's a shame that the NFL is not more willing to try to find meaningful solutions to create meaningful dialogue that leads to substantive change. Because right now, based on what they're putting out there, the statements that the various clubs have issued, the statement that the league office issued, it seems like they're in a defensive posture, and that doesn't seem like it lends itself to being open to hearing the plight of black coaches around the National Football League, the plight of what Brian Flores is facing, what he was feeling when he walked into that Giants interview specifically. It feels like they're just trying to be defensive and cover their end as far as a liability standpoint is concerned. So it's unfortunate that a league as powerful as the NFL is sending that message to the rest of the society when it comes to workplace diversity at the top of these organizations. But we've seen that the NFL owners aren't necessarily going to be moved by anything except for something that can negatively impact the bottom line.
It's so true, Chris, and to bring that all the way back, that feeling, to the job that started this conversation, Jacksonville hiring Doug Peterson, Jacksonville where the reports were that Byron Leftwich did not want to work with Trent Baalke, their current GM. You can already hear people kind of loading up the take cannon with that, saying, well, they wanted him there, but he didn't want to work with that GM, when everything we've just laid out would kind of indicate, like, man, if you're a black head coach, it's probably pretty hard to walk into this feeling like, if I don't nail this one opportunity and make it perfect, that I'm going to get many more. And so, Chris, I'm sure it's daunting to look out there and feel like I have got to take the perfect opportunity or else I may not get another one.
But then the other side of that is, if I don't take the opportunity that's presented to me right now, I may never have another opportunity, i.e. David Culley with the Houston Texans last year. So it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't proposition for black coaches when it comes to being able to elevate to the status of head coach. And that's a part of the issue that faces the National Football League right now. And so I'll be interested to see what their investigation into the allegations that Brian Flores uncovers, especially as it pertains to the Miami Dolphins, because that's something that the NFL takes seriously in terms of protecting competitive balance and the integrity of the game. Of late, we saw the report that Cameron Wolf, an NFL Network reporter, said that there was a witness that corroborates the allegations that Dolphins head coach Brian Flores made about Stephen Ross, offering him $100,000 per loss in 2019. We'll see what comes of that. But, I mean, I got to say, Gojo, with the man that has the sports character that Brian Flores does, for him to be boxed into a corner where he feels like he has no other alternative other than to file a class action lawsuit against the wrongs that he feels have been perpetrated against him by these NFL clubs with their hiring practices is a real shame, and it's a black eye on the NFL.
There is no doubt. That is, quite frankly, right now, one of a few black eyes that the NFL has to deal with. Because coming up next, we'll get to one that came back to center stage yesterday. Everyone, I hope you had your fun in Washington celebrating the name, because the real issues are back with the Washington Commanders football team, whatever you want to call them. Dan Snyder's club is under the microscope again, and you can guess it ain't good. Next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $700 on average. It's Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty. We'll get to your calls, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776, coming up in about 10 minutes. But, Chris, the Washington Commanders had been in the news for the name change recently. And boy, oh boy, I hope that was fun for everyone that roots for that team, because we are back to the usual BS from Dan Snyder and this organization after the last day. Because on Thursday, five women appeared before Congress giving details about their allegations of sexual assault and sexual harassment during their time with the Washington football team, including Tiffany Johnson, a former marketing and event coordinator for the team, who revealed for the first time that Snyder touched her without her consent during a work dinner about 13 years ago. Snyder has issued a statement denying her allegations, but this was former Washington football team employee Tiffany Johnson detailing this encounter yesterday in front of Congress.
Avoid an uncomfortable situation in front of potential suite owners is to just do what my boss asks, which on one occasion involved him tossing me in the air to do a cheerleader stunt for a client while I was wearing a skirt. I learned on one specific occasion that when I was asked by my boss to attend a networking event and, oh, to dress cute, it was actually an orchestration by him and Dan Snyder to put me in a compromising sexual situation. I learned that placing me strategically by the owner at a work dinner after this networking event was not for me to discuss business, but to allow him, Dan Snyder, to place his hand on my thigh under the table.
And Chris, now amidst a new round of people calling for the NFL to release more of the findings from the Beth Wilkerson-led Washington football team investigation into that toxic workplace environment, we now see that because of a legal agreement, what appears to be between the league and Daniel Snyder, the Washington Commanders owner Daniel Snyder may actually have a say in whether or not the findings from that investigation are released according to this committee, which is yet another disaster for Roger Goodell and the NFL in the way that they have handled this particular instance with this particular team.
Well, Gojo, you might frame it as being a disaster from a PR standpoint, but from a legal standpoint, in order to avoid liability or any potential future litigation, this is another defense strategy for the Washington Commanders and for the National Football League, because all parties would be culpable in what was taking place in that organization for the better part of the last decade. And when you hear some of the stories that were described by survivors of that workplace environment, I mean, even going as far as the cheerleaders who were remote in locations that were outside of the country, having to give their passports to team personnel while they were on location to do photo shoots for the Washington football team calendar. That's shameful to ask those individuals to then, while they were on location for those shoots, to be quote unquote dates or to escort, you know, some of the sponsors or big donors to dinners at those areas. I couldn't believe some of the things that were uncovered on out of that investigation, on top of some of the other things that we noted from women that were actually in that workplace, in that front office, and had interactions with coaching staff and with front office personnel. It's shameful what the Washington Commanders have gotten away with, and pretty much without being punished by the National Football League, without being disciplined in any substantive way. The $10 million fine that they had to pay, Dan Snyder stepping away for a year, That doesn't replace them being accountable for the actions that they were allowed to commit based on what we heard from the survivors of those incidents. So, yeah, this is not a surprising move for me, Gojo. This is not surprising to hear, because when they launched the independent investigation, quote-unquote independent investigation by Beth Wilkinson, we knew that the Washington football team was going to be responsible for paying for that investigation, which represents a conflict of interest in and of itself. So I'm not surprised that this is more about the NFL covering up any wrongdoing as opposed to getting to the bottom of things and actually changing the culture within that organization. They've done a lot of things to try to paint a pretty picture, from hiring the first black team president in Jason Wright last year to changing the team name because it was offensive, it was a racial slur. But the inner workings of the organization, the MO of the Washington Commanders, it really hasn't changed, and it's really because of the owner, Dan Snyder. They say a fish rots from the head down, and that's exactly what we're seeing with the Washington football franchise.
Chris, I'll go bottom up. It's a foundation of a house that's cracked right now, and you can cut the lawn and paint it a different color, but at the end of the day, the thing that this is built on and the person at the center of all of this is still in place after all of this. None of that has changed, and I feel terrible for Jason Wright, for Ron Rivera, for the people that were brought in here to be the window dressing for something that ultimately has not changed. It's out of their control. They're doing the best they can. I believe that about the people involved, but that doesn't change the person at the center of this, because that's what this goes back to. Now, Tisha Thompson, ESPN investigative and enterprise reporter, joined NFL Live and detailed the biggest element that's released from this latest round of testimony in the investigation here.
The biggest news item that came out of it was that Tiffany Johnston, a former manager of marketing and events, testified in front of Congress that in 2005 or 2006, she was attending a work dinner and was Dan Snyder put his hand on her thigh under the table. She couldn't get him to stop, and that he later tried to push her into a limousine until his attorney told him that that wasn't a good idea. That was a new revelation. She was one of several women, five in total, who told Congress about these types of what they called sexual harassment events that happened over the course of 20 years under Snyder's tenure. Snyder has contended that he is a hands-off boss. These women told Congress it couldn't be even further from the truth, and documented and explained events where he was involved in very minute decisions, and said that he really set the tone within the Washington Commanders organization.
You've got him now directly implicated in all of this, Chris. And again, we've constantly asked the question, why is he the one worth saving if you're the NFL in this spot? When not too long ago, in the only other instance we can really remember of a major owner in the NFL being ousted by the rest of the league, and Jerry Richardson and the Panthers, for what feels like very similar tenor in the conversations around the two. Again, it all is going to go back to, Chris, and continue to cloud judgment and doubt about what the league has to hide on this front. We said it when the John Gruden emails were released as a part of this, and then the rest of those emails and the conversation went away, and now it is going to come roaring back again, because the NFL seems to be hell-bent on protecting Daniel Snyder for reasons I cannot comprehend.
Well, Mike, you asked the question and then you went ahead and answered it yourself. The reality is that the attitudes toward women, the misogynistic behavior that's been expressed in the Washington football team, is probably more pervasive than we actually realize. That's why they don't want to release the documents, the finding by Beth Wilkinson and her staff, to the House Oversight Committee. That's why they don't want that stuff out there for public consumption, because there's probably correspondence, there's probably communications via email and otherwise that would suggest that these attitudes are more widespread, and the NFL doesn't want to deal with the optics of it, nor do they want to deal with the potential liability, because if this comes out and emboldens other people that are dealing with similar situations, similar experiences at other organizations, to file their own lawsuits against owners and other club personnel. And that's what the NFL doesn't want to do. They don't want to unlock Pandora's box. And so rather than trying to get to the bottom of it to actually affect the kind of change that we all know is necessary, they'd rather bury it, so the owners don't have to be liable, and so they're not implicated, they're not culpable in any kind of behavior that they engaged in, or that any of their personnel or employees engaged in. I think that's what it's all about. It's unfortunate that that's the stance the NFL has taken, but we've seen, Gojo, they're not going to do the right thing unless they're absolutely forced to.
And we'll see if this can maybe approach being enough, if maybe all of these things popping up at once are enough to light the fire that needs to go to in order to start to create some sort of change here. We'll see. We all obviously have our doubts for reasons that are, well, laid out in this segment that we just had with you guys. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. We'll get to your calls on some of the new hires around the NFL and take a look at the absolute disaster last night for one team in the NBA who continues to find new ways to hit rock bottom. Next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Ken Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golick Jr. and Chris Canty, we're presented by Progressive Insurance. We'll get to some unfortunate truth serum that continues to get doled out in the association with one team that Chris Canty loves very dearly here. How did the
I don't need the truth serum, like, Gojo. I know what it is already. I'm just waiting for everybody else to realize it, because people keep assigning this benefit of the doubt to the Lakers because LeBron James is on the roster, even though he hadn't played in five straight games. People want to keep assigning the Lakers a level of success that I know is not going to happen. So I don't need the truth serum, and I'm more than willing to give truth serum to all the fans out there, LeBron, or fans of the Lakers that are still trying to keep hope alive. Let me tell you what's not going to happen this year. Let me tell you what's not going to happen. I know we don't want to do it right now,
no,
but
no, look him in the eyes and tell him, Chris. Look him in the eyes and tell him right now.
Exactly. No, well, let me tell you what's not going to happen right now. This year, the Lakers ain't going to win a championship. They're not. They're not going to win a championship. The most likely scenario, the Lakers are going to be in the play-in tournament. They're going to get in, and they're going to get bounced by a top two seed in the Western Conference, whether it's Golden State or Phoenix. That's what's going to happen. And the sooner you come to that revelation, that realization, the better off you're going to be. It makes being able to stomach last night's loss that much easier. You don't watch the Lakers games with high expectations anymore. You watch to see the entertainment value and how they're going to unfold and soil themselves at the end of games. That's why you tune in and watch. It's still entertaining, but in an opposite way. It's not entertaining because your team is winning. You're just willing to tune in to see which way are they going to blow the game tonight. Is it going to be more like what we saw at the end of the Hornets game last Friday with Russell Westbrook going rogue? Or is it going to be more like, allowing Reggie Jackson, allowing guys like Nicholas Batum, guys like Serge Ibaka go off, and then only to mount a comeback and think you got a chance, and then Anthony Davis misses a runner at the end? I mean, listen, we can go a lot of different ways on how the Lakers find creative ways to blow games, but ultimately, you know the end result. They're going to lose. That's why they're at where they're at in the Western Conference standings. The quicker you realize this is what this team is, the better off you're going to be in terms of the range of emotions that you go through this season. I'm just here to tell you, don't shoot the messenger. This is the reality of the LA Lakers right now. And quite frankly, I don't know if we're ever going to get back to a couple of years ago what we saw in the bubble with LeBron and Anthony Davis. I think that time is gone. That ship has sailed. And now it's just a matter of being able to ride it out until the organization can push the reset button.
Whew, that is a cold truth that, quite frankly, if you swap out some of the names, could apply just as much to the Lakers and the Knicks.
Bing bong!
Remember those good times, man. They seem like forever ago at this point.
Yeah, but here's the worst part, though, Gojo. I mean, you got Anthony Davis, who played well last night. I don't want to take anything away from
AD. I get that he played well, Chris,
but
how can Anthony Davis and Russell Westbrook not beat the butt-naked Clippers?
Like, butt-naked, no Paul George, no Kawhi, no superstars. They just... For whatever, listen, that game was not as close as the final score.
No.
For those of you that don't know, for those of you that didn't watch it, the Clippers had a 17-point lead in the third quarter. It was 84-67. Like, that was not close. The Lakers had a Herculean effort led by Malik Monk and then Russell Westbrook knocking down some key shots in order to climb back in that game. But that game was not as close as the final score would indicate, and the Clippers had no business letting that game be close. But they still do have Reggie Jackson. They still do have Marcus Morris, guys that are capable of making big shots in this league, and that's exactly what that did. Marcus Morris, that kid hanging out in the corner with the big three ball at the end, and then Reggie Jackson splitting a double team and then laying it up over a third defender. Thank you for coming out. God bless you. Good night. That was the story of last night's game.
Yeah, I don't even know if I could call that a double team or a trap, what Russ threw his way on that one. So the Lakers in a lot of trouble. Coming up next, though, could Joe Burrow even at this point save the Los Angeles Lakers? I'd be willing to buy it. We'll dive more into the Bengals quarterback next.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.